is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, anything is possible this March with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Get a huge $2,000 trade-in discount on a new machine in March when you trade in any old Dr. Dish machine. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Scott Nagy, head men's basketball coach at Wright State University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at HoopheadsPod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are jumping on tonight to talk some NBA. There has been some monster performances across the league in the last week since we recorded, so we're going to talk a little bit about that and probably look at how that has impacted or potentially impacts the playoff races, how it impacts the race for the MVP. And we'll dive into all of that after Jason gets done making me look foolish with his trivia.
Okay, well, here we go. So yesterday, Joel Embiid recorded his 10th game of the season with at least 40 points and 10 rebounds. Only two players since the 76-77 merger have recorded more games in a single season. And both players went on to win the MVP that season. Can you name the two players?
So I'm looking for more than
10 games
with 40 points
and 10 rebounds.
And they both went on to win the MVP.
Yes. And
what's the time frame since the
merger, 76-77 merger?
So 40-point, 10-rebound games. So one of them has to be Shaq.
No.
No.
One is recent and one is not recent.
40 and 10 and won the MVP. Ooh, man. More than 10. That's a lot, man.
They're both 12 games, Mike.
Giannis?
No.
Man, okay. LeBron?
Nope. It's your favorite MVP.
Jokic.
Nope. It's your favorite MVP of all time.
My favorite MVP of all time. Facetiously my favorite MVP.
Oh, facetiously.
Russell Westbrook.
There's one of them. Okay.
Okay. Is that the recent one or the not
recent
one?
Yeah, that's the recent one. No, okay, not so recent one goes one. Back before I was alive, Mike.
Moses Malone.
There you go. Good job. Those are your two players.
All right, so I got I don't know why. Yeah, Moses makes sense. I mean, Moses had a lot of rebounds, although the 40 points is – people forget how good Moses was. I mean, you didn't really see him play probably ever, but –
I saw the corpse of Moses Mullen play when I was like two, probably. But
that guy, at the end of his career, he was a shell of what he was when he was in his prime. And he was never – Moses was not a explosive athlete, but there was just something about the way that he was able to work for position. And he was not a high jumper, but he was a very quick jumper, and he was just a guy who was relentless. I think my biggest memory of Moses Mullen is him being at the free throw line and just the sweat pouring off his chin like a faucet. And I can still see right in my mind's eye when I think of Moses Mullen, that's the first image that comes to my head is him at the line just pouring sweat off him, like seriously like a faucet.
That was always the interesting thing. Like I'm dovetailing back to LeBron. When he was young, he never sweat. It looked like he would have been played for 35 minutes and you wouldn't have even known he was playing. Do you remember that? Like when he was a kid, like he just didn't look like he was sweating hard.
Yeah. Everybody obviously sweats to a different degree. All you have to do is go and
who knew this was going to be a topic of conversation.
That's right. But I think about pickup basketball, and there's some dudes that would be playing and literally
– you don't want to guard them, right?
Yeah. Their shirt was completely drenched. Their shorts were completely drenched and dripping sweat off the bottom of the shorts. And then there'd be other guys that barely would have any moisture on them at all. So, yeah, I think some guys sweat a lot and some guys don't. Any tremendous exciting analysis there. But I just remember Moses, like I said, being at the free throw line with sweat just pouring off of him, pouring off of his chin as he shoots.
Okay, that's enough sweat talk. All right.
That's enough sweat talk.
Nikola Jokic became the seventh player in NBA history to record 75 triple-doubles on Monday. Only this player reached 75 triple-doubles in fewer games than Jokic.
Well, the obvious answer would be Magic.
Well, Magic Johnson was seven games more than Jokic.
So somebody did it in less games.
I'll put it into perspective for you, Mike. Jokic did it in 511 games. The player that did 75 career triple doubles before him did it in 182.
Wow.
This is a player from before my time.
That's Oscar Robertson.
There you go. What do you think about anything to say about that? 182 games, he gets 75 career triple doubles.
Well, it speaks to, I think, one of the things that when you look back at NBA history and you think about the statistics from the early 60s, and there was just a pace of play. And the shooting obviously wasn't as good, so there were more rebounds available. Like you always see the Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, 25 rebounds a game and getting 44, 45 rebounds in a game. And the factors there are twofold. One, the pace is just faster. And two, the players don't shoot it as well. So there are just more total rebounds available back in that era. And I think the season where Wilt averaged 50 when he played 48 and a half minutes a game, that's the same season that the Big O averaged close to a triple-double or a triple-double. That's the season that Elgin Baylor, I believe, was – for some reason now I can't remember exactly what the reason was, but he was only playing home games, but he averaged like 37 a game.
Was he not vaccinated?
No, it was not that he was not vaccinated. I can't remember now the exact scenario. I'm going to have to go back and reread, but – There's a lot of statistics that are sort of an anomaly from that 61-62 season just for whatever reason. But that era produced some of the craziest stat lines ever. I don't think that – I mean, the Wilt 50 a game is never going to be – that's never going to be topped. And obviously, Wilt averaging 48 and a half minutes per game where he played, including overtime, he averaged more minutes than you could – play in a regular season game. That record is obviously never going to be touched or broken.
How many overtime games did that team go into? Jesus Christ.
Well, you average 48 and a half minutes. I mean, so you get what? He's playing 82 games. So you got to get, I don't know. I don't want to do the math. It's too late. It's too late. It's too late. too late at night for me to do the math in my head. But nonetheless, pretty incredible that he averaged more minutes than were possible to play in a regulation game. Let's put it that way.
All right, I got one more. It happened tonight. Kyrie Irving is the fifth player with multiple career games of 50 points and 75% field goal percentage in that game during the shot clock era. There are four other players that have done this. Name them. I'm going to tell you, Mike, that I think there's a good chance that you're going to name three of them, and the fourth one, I don't think there's a – you got a – no, excuse my French. You got no shot in hell at figuring out that last one.
That's okay, so these are 50-point games with 75%
field goal percentage, and this is since the shot clock era, 54-55.
Shaq?
No.
Shoot 75% and score 50. Giannis?
No.
Jordan?
Jordan's one. He did it three times.
Shooting 75%. Karl Malone?
Oh, there's two.
So there's one more I have to get that should be fairly remotely.
You were just talking about this player.
I was just talking about this player. Wilt.
Yeah, Wilt's the other one. Those are the three I expected you to get.
Okay, so this other one is off the radar, like this is going to be a guy I never heard of.
No, or you've heard radar, this. You've heard this player. I've heard of this player.
Okay. Chris Jackson.
No.
No? I thought it would be somebody off the radar. So Chris Jackson, I believe he's got a 50-point game. I thought maybe he got hot. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf?
No. Okay. Here, I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
He is in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
He played at the University of Notre Dame.
Kelly Tripucka?
He went to DeMatha High School. He was selected
Austin Carr.
He was selected by the Buffalo Braves. He also played for the Indiana Pacers, the Los Angeles Lakers. The Utah Jazz was his longest stint. He ended his career with the Milwaukee Bucks in 1991.
Oh man, that was too many hints. I should be able to get this, but none of those things in and of themselves are ringing a bell. He went to, what college did he go to again?
He went to Notre Dame.
He went to Notre Dame.
He played all four years, and he's still alive.
He finished with the Bucks. He played for Notre Dame. He went to DeMatha.
Utah has his number retired.
His number's retired in Utah. I mean,
he shares the initials with the same with a guy who plays with LeBron.
AD? Oh, Adrian Dantley.
There you go.
All right, Adrian Dantley.
I figured there was no way you were getting that one without any hints. So.
That's now that you say that, Adrian Dantley, like a 6'3", old school post up player, a player that would not or could not probably exist in the game today, yet during his era was probably one of the better scorers in the league. So I guess if you think about his player type and the fact of the types of shots that Adrian Dantley took, and he was certainly a good scorer, I bet he had multiple seasons where he averaged over 25 a game. So it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, but at the same time, like I never would have pulled that guy's name.
not the first name that would come to mind. Obviously, there were plenty of hints there for me that I didn't get any of them. So,
well, you got the last one.
The last one.
All right, Mike. So, I guess we're gonna start by talking about the Cavs because that's what we like to talk about, and then after we do that, we're gonna talk about the big performances last week and go from there. Mike, did you see the breaking news?
No.
Richmond Heights won tonight, Mike.
I knew that. Yeah, I saw that earlier.
Congrats to Mike's employer and their basketball program. They're
in the regional final. So they are in, for those of you who are not in Ohio, the regional final here in the state of Ohio means that is the
Final eight,
and they are. My school is Division IV, which is the smallest classification.
Do you know who they're playing or no?
They are playing St. Thomas Aquinas. which that doesn't mean anything to me or
they
to
have
you.
Jesus
I'm sure
on their side, maybe.
I guess we'll have to see. They may need him. They may need him to suit up.
Yeah. All right. So I just saw that on the Twitter. So I wanted to make sure I shouted out your employer, Mike.
There you go. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Anyways, so the Cavs. Here's the bottom line. They went 3-1, which is what I thought they would do. I know you wanted to go 4-0 this week, but I just didn't see them beating the 76ers. Or was it? They went 3-1 this week, right? I'm not wrong on that statement, right?
Well, let me look at the schedule. I feel like you're wrong, but
oh no!
I need to get to the correct page here. Where
they beat Toronto on Sunday. They won today. They lost to Philly on Friday, and they won. Didn't they win last Wednesday?
I'm looking right now. I'm going to tell you. I should have had it already pulled up, but I didn't.
They didn't win. Oh yeah, no, they lost to the Hornets on Wednesday. A bad loss on Wednesday. That's right. So they went 2-2. I said 3-1.
Well, I said that coming out of the All-Star break, I felt like they needed to go 4-0 against Detroit, Washington, Minnesota, and Charlotte, and they went 1-3.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good. You're injured.
Not good.
Your injury bug keeps coming. Although Garland's looked really good, but, you know, Jared Allen is out for an indefinite period of time. Who knows what that means? We have back-to-back – we have brutal back-to-back games this week coming up. You know, at least they pulled it out tonight. It looked like it was going to be bad in the third quarter tonight, and they pulled out the victory.
Garland, that's a huge win against Indiana. I mean, it's a huge win. There's no other way to phrase it. You have to beat Indiana if you're going to – look, it's really important. We're going to dive into this a little bit more in a second, but if you want to keep that sixth seed, right? You want to stay out of the play-in, and you got to beat teams that – you should beat. And the Cavs had gone through a stretch here where you lose to Detroit, which that's a game you shouldn't lose. I don't care who's in the lineup, who's out of the lineup.
You lost to them twice, Mike.
Correct. You lose to Minnesota. Minnesota's playing better, but still, that's a home game for the Cavs. You can't lose that one. And then Charlotte, who's been playing really, really poorly, comes into Cleveland and just smacks the Cavs around. So I think what's been disturbing with this team a little bit over the last 2-3 weeks since the middle of February has been just the defense has kind of cratered, and they've been giving up a lot of points. And this team's not good enough offensively right now to be able to give up a ton of points. They can't be giving their opponents 115, 120 points a game and expect they're going to outscore them. They just don't have that. I mean, they don't have that kind of firepower when they're completely healthy, let alone when they're slightly compromised with right now being with Jared Allen being out. So,
yeah. Mobley looked really good again today, Mike. Obviously Garland looked, 41 points. He played really well. He carried the team today. So thanks Garland for doing that. I appreciate it. Very much so. It's greatly appreciated.
Garland's fantastic. The guy, he's what, 21 years old, 20 years old. And he's just killing it, and he's only going to continue to get better. The thing that we've talked about it numerous times, but his shot making is great, but it's really his ability to pass the ball that I think is unlocking what he can be as a championship level point guard. It's one thing to be able to score the ball, but at his size, he has to be able to pass the ball and be a facilitator in addition to his ability to score, and he has more than proven that and more than stepped up. And that guy's going to be – he's going to be in the All-Star game, barring injury. He's going to be in the All-Star game for the next 10 years. I think the Cavs have two – going forward, I think they have two locks for the All-Star game over the next 10 years unless injury or something really strange in the development of Garland and Mobley. I just don't see where those two guys aren't just pencil them in every year for the All-Star game.
Yep. I do want to give someone their due, Mike. They've stepped up over the last three games. You know who I'm going to say?
Dean Wade?
No. Lauri Markkanen. Oh, baby.
Markkanen's played well. He's played well. He really has.
He's had three or four 20-plus games in the last 10 days. I mean, and if you would have told me that when we got him in the offseason, I would have laughed in your face. So keep it up, dude. Keep up the good work. You know, was right high.
Markkanen and better or worse than what you expected when the Cavs signed him?
Better. 100% better.
Yeah, I think you have to say that I don't think he's been perfect, and there's certainly been moments this season where I've been really frustrated with Markkanen, where it just feels like
he's a little streaky.
Yeah, where he wasn't knocking in big shots that you wanted him to put in. But I'd say for the most part, he's given me and shown me more than what I would have thought. And he's, I think at this point, he's earned the right to be called an important part of what they're going to do going forward. And again, I don't know what his ultimate role is. Does he continue to be a starter? Where does he fit in? But he's been very good. He's been very good. And if he's your fourth best guy, I've said it over and over again. To me, I feel like the key guy in this development is Okoro, right? Because Okoro's got to be better offensively. He's very good defensively, but he's got to develop as an offensive player.
All right, so we're going to predict how the Cavs are going to do this week in their games. I'm going to predict that this is going to be our first really Debbie Downer week, Mike. All right, so on Friday, we play at Miami. That's a loss.
That's a loss.
Saturday, we play at Chicago. That's a loss. Chicago doesn't play from Wednesday till that day. So they
did you see the stat though that Chicago
they're terrible good against. I'm preparing for disappointment and it will we'll be happy
you'll
be with pleasant,
you'll be you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
we're due for a pleasant surprise win. I don't think we've really had a pleasant surprise win.
Who would you rather beat? Would you rather beat Chicago or would you rather beat? I think I would rather beat Chicago because they're plummeting, right? A little bit. I mean, they're a game ahead of us right now.
Yeah, if I have to win one or two of those games, one of those two, I think I'd rather beat the Bulls. Miami, I don't think we're catching Miami. I don't think we want to catch Miami, to be honest with you.
Okay, that's fair. All right.
So here, go ahead.
And then Monday we're at home against the Clippers.
You got to win that game. That game's a must win because in your next game, which I know is beyond the confines of this week before we podcast next week, but then you play Philadelphia and Denver. Now, those two games are both at home. You got a nice little 5-game homestand, but you got all teams that, well, I guess you don't know, you have Detroit. So you better win that Detroit game. Let's put it that way.
Oh, the Laker game? Come on now.
So I guess you should be favored in 3 of those 5 home games, right? You're going to be favored against the Clippers, probably not against Philly. Probably not against Denver, be favored against Detroit and Los Angeles. So I think if you look at the Cavs realistically over the next 8 games, I think you'd be happy they go 5-3. I think 5-3 is where you'd want.
I think it's attainable.
Even 4-4, I think you'd probably be pretty happy. If the Cavs play 500 the rest of the way, which I think they should be able to do. If they play 500 the rest of the way, they should be able to hold on to the 6th seed.
Yeah.
So that leads into the next question, which is when we look at the Eastern Conference playoff race and you look at where the Cavs stand, how do you see this playing out? Not in terms of exactly where they're going to finish, but in your mind,
where do I want them to fit? Who do I want them to play? Is that
who
what you're
you want to play? I don't think it matters where. I don't think where they finish because I think there's going to be a lot of weird and strange things going on in the last week or two of the season, simply because of where the Brooklyn Nets sit in the play-in. That I'm not sure that I want to be the 1 or 2 seed. Where I could get a first round series with Brooklyn, right? I think if you're Miami, Philly, Milwaukee, look, now if you can guarantee yourself that Brooklyn is going to be the 7 seed, then maybe you're okay being the number 1 seed, but there's no guarantee that Brooklyn is going to stay out of that 9-10 spot, which means that they might end up being the 8th seed. So I think really we're all the teams that are currently above the Cavs. I think if you gave them truth serum, I think that they'd want to finish I think they'd want to finish third, don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you think that most of those teams would rather play the Cavs in a 3-6 matchup than roll the dice that they'd get Brooklyn in a 2-7 or a 1-8?
Yeah, I agree.
So, but who if you're do I the, want Cavs, the Cavs,
I want, I want. There's two teams I want to play.
Okay.
Chicago's one of those teams.
Yes, I agree 100%.
And Boston's the other team. Now, I know Boston's playing really good right now. I get it. But.
Yeah, I would feel fairly confident against Boston. Not like, that I would feel like, hey, we're going to win. It's a guarantee.
But
I would not go into that series thinking, oh, we have no chance.
And to be honest with you, Mike, this is going to be a.
I think you're going to say the same thing I am, but go ahead.
You're going to say Philly. I'm not going to say Philly. I think they have a chance against Miami.
I think they have a chance against everybody except Milwaukee.
Ooh, I like that.
Now, do I think that...
And Brooklyn.
Yeah, as silly as that sounds.
I know, right? It's so stupid, but I would not want to play Brooklyn.
Well, I would play Brooklyn with the caveat that if the vaccine mandate is still in place, I think you'd have a decent chance of beating Brooklyn. I think the rest of Brooklyn's roster is such a mess right now, and you still have Durant coming back off the injury.
Shout out to Joe Harris. Hopefully he's better.
Yes, absolutely.
We got the inside scoop. We should have broke it, Mike. We had the inside scoop like 2 weeks ago, and it finally got broke this week. I don't know.
That's inside information, so I don't think we were in a position to share that. Maybe we could. Maybe we should become the breaking news. We got to start competing with Woj and Shaq.
The Woj bomb.
We
obviously didn't want to break confidence, and we had heard from Joe's dad. So, bummer for him. Sad to hear about him being done for the year. So, sorry to hear. Hope you heal quickly, and maybe you can be the savior of the Brooklyn Nets next year, Joe, and fix all their problems. But there's such an enigma, and I don't necessarily know. We don't know who's gonna be able to play. And that's the big question: who can play? And we've been saying it since game one this year. Is Kyrie gonna be able to play home games ever at this season? I don't know. I've got to imagine, Mike. I've got to think eventually they're going to – I mean, everything else is really getting lifted.
Yeah, you would think by the time the playoffs come around that he's going to be playing home games.
You got to imagine that. I mean
– Which makes those one or two seeds – I mean, Brooklyn's not catching the Cavs. They'd have to go something ridiculous like – 16-4, and the Cavs would have to go.
We only have 17 like games left, right?
Like 6-14 or something. You know what I mean? Like whatever. It would have to be an utter and complete total collapse from the Cavs, even for Toronto to catch them. Especially since we got the season series in Toronto with that big win on Sunday night.
Not to mention that. I mean, I'm looking at Brooklyn's schedule. You know, they have Philly coming on Thursday night, which I'll have that on in the background. They play Philly, they play Milwaukee, they play Miami, they play Dallas still, they play in Utah. So they've got, those are games. Then they play us at the end of the season. Think about that last week of the season, man. The Cavs have an interesting schedule I think we play Brooklyn and Milwaukee in the last two games of the season, if I'm not incorrect. So, like, we're just sitting here.
At that point, Milwaukee could be tanking to try to play the Cavs in the first round, right?
Possibly.
All those teams, Philly in the fourth from the last game could be tanking. You've got actually, if you look at, I think the end of that schedule is actually fairly soft. You got Orlando in there. You got the Knicks in there, although those are both road games. You got Atlanta. Atlanta's probably going to be battling for playoff positioning. I don't know. Again, this whole thing could go either way. I've seen the Cavs play well against good teams and play poorly against bad teams, so you just don't know.
Yeah, we have two games against Orlando in the last seven games.
Which theoretically, right, that should be two wins. Like I said, I think the Cavs, I'm not sure, I guess maybe you'd be happy to move up to the five seed and get a 4-5, and that might guarantee you Chicago or Boston if you could pass one of those two teams, which I don't think, based on what we've seen from Boston lately, despite the misgivings that you and I might have about the Celtics, it seems like they've figured something out. I'm guessing they're going to keep climbing, whereas Chicago, maybe. I haven't heard anything for sure about when Lonzo or Caruso or Patrick Williams are coming back, but it seems like they're going to continue to drop, I would guess. So to me, it's probably Boston probably creeps up into that four spot, and then Chicago and the Cavs battle it out for the five. That's all I'm guessing. Because I just don't think – at this point, I don't think Brooklyn or Toronto can catch the Cavs. It would take a complete collapse, and it would take those teams going on a huge run. They just have to finish 500. If they finish out the season playing 500 basketball the rest of the way, which I think they should be able to, and I'm sure they'll probably play slightly better than that, that's going to assure them of at least the sixth seed. And then depending on how Chicago or Boston potentially fares, I think there's a chance they could, if they play well, maybe slide up into that five spot, which in all honesty probably gives them a better chance to win a first round series. I think they, as I said before, I don't want to play Milwaukee. If Milwaukee and Cleveland is the 3-6, that's not going to go well for the Cavs. I think Miami and Philadelphia, I'd give them a 15-20% chance maybe of winning a series against one of those two teams, although I don't think it would be very likely. However, if they played Boston or Chicago, I think now your chances are creeping up closer to 50%. It's more of a 50-50 split when you talk about Chicago and Boston. I don't think either of those teams, I would not be afraid to play either one of those teams. And I still think, to me, Milwaukee's still the favorite. I just think that they're, when they're right and they have all their guys, and if they get Lopez back, I just think Milwaukee still has to be considered the favorite. And I don't see a seven-game series. If every team is healthy, I still think Milwaukee's the best team in the East.
Okay. You would say even over Brooklyn, if everyone can play?
To me, the Simmons thing is still hanging over Brooklyn. I still think it's being downplayed, the fact that the last time we saw him that he was completely melting down in a playoff series. He shot 34% from the free throw line. He was completely afraid to attack the basket, which is really one of his best skills because he can't shoot the ball. So if you have a Ben Simmons who's afraid to go to the basket because he doesn't want to get fouled, I just don't know how that goes away just because he got traded from Philly to Brooklyn. He hasn't set foot on a court under pressure with people watching since that Atlanta series. And I just don't think that thing goes away. It doesn't go away until you put yourself in the spotlight again. He might think he's feeling 100% right and ready to go, but when you step back out in front of the fans, in front of the cameras, in front of social media, it's a different story. And he's going to have to get his mind right. And I think it's being, quite honestly, I think it's being underplayed how difficult it is to come back from something like that. And I know I talked about it in one of our previous episodes, how long it took me to sort of overcome something similar to that. And eventually I was able to do it to probably 98%. But even then, I don't feel like I ever got back to 100% of the confidence that I had prior to something like that happening to me, that performance anxiety or whatever you want to call it. And I mean, I just think it's being underplayed. And okay. So I still am a little dubious of Brooklyn. Give me Milwaukee.
All right. Sounds good. So we'll see how it goes out. I think at this point, you know, we're going to kind of have to, you know, our episodes are primarily going to be focused on like playoff positioning. I mean, we're getting to that point. You got like less than a quarter left of the season, basically, right? We're, you know, yes. 17 games left. So.
Ready to feel the excitement of College Basketball Conference Championship Week like never before? Turn your team's victory into your own big win with DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. It's that simple. If they win, you win. Illinois listeners, we have some big news. Mobile registration is back, and right now you can sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook simply by downloading the app right to your phone. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still join the action with DraftKings Pools. Everyone can play free all March long for a shot at over $250,000 in prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code HOOPHEADS. Bet $5 on any college hoops team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. If they win, you win with promo code HOOPHEADS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. 21 and over. Restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
All right, now looking at the Western Conference, I mean, Phoenix is going to have the one seed. I think that, which is pretty crazy, now that we've got injuries upon injuries over in Phoenix, and they're still managing to just steamroll people. You know, they're out. Cam Johnson, Chris Paul, and Devin Booker are out right now. And they still won. They won, albeit by 3 points tonight. Phoenix looks like they're a lock for number one. Memphis is looking pretty good. Golden State's cratering a little bit, but they're still, they're 2-8 over their last 10. I didn't realize they were that bad. Yikes. Mike, that's not good for them, huh?
They've been bad. They've been really bad. They've been really bad.
But maybe, you know, tonight Jackie Moon was there, so maybe they're going to do better. You know who Jackie Moon is, right?
I know the name, but I can put a face in front of
Will,
me.
Will Ferrell's character in Tropic Thunder.
Or oh, not Tropic yeah, Thunder. There you go.
You know,
you
not
go.
Tropic there Thunder. What's the name of that movie? What's the name of that basketball movie?
Jeez, that's right. Semi-Pro.
Semi-Pro, thank you. Tropic Thunder was Ben Stiller, sorry.
There you go. Looks like Golden State's going to win tonight, though. They're going to finish off the Clippers, it looks like, tonight.
So I think the Western Conference is definitely, you know, I think it's interesting because I think the Eastern Conference is more competitive. Obviously, we've got two teams in the Western Conference that are going to make the playoffs. They're going to be under 500. Here's looking at you, LA Lakers.
Ooh, man.
Hey, listen, LeBron had a heck of a game the other night. Like, I give it, listen, I know LeBron is the creator of all the madness, and I get that. But he showed up. He had a huge night. Was it 56 or 54?
56.
56 points. I mean, very efficient night, too. It wasn't like he was just jacking up shots after shots. He shot very well that game. He shot really well from the line. I think it was 12, 13 or something like that. I mean, but that team's pitiful. So bad. The reports that are coming out that there are people pushing for Westbrook to come off the bench and Frank Vogel's resisting. Listen,
Westbrook's wife tweeting and him saying that's a disgrace to his family name, that people are calling him Westbrook. You saw that, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, he's terrible. He's god awful. He's the worst MVP in the last 20 years, Mike. Name a worse MVP. Name a worse MVP. I'm sorry.
MVP in the season he was the MVP or in the ensuing years following his MVP?
Maybe a combination of both. Is there someone else in mind?
Here's the problem is if you don't give that MVP to Russell Westbrook, you know who is going to. James Harden. So give me Russ any day, man. Give me Russ's triple-double over James Harden as an NBA MVP. Give me Russ all day.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring up the Derrick Rose MVP.
No. I mean, Derrick Rose was tremendous that year. The reason why Derrick Rose's career went south is not because he became a worse player. It's because he just tore his knee, right? Tore his ACL and injuries just robbed him of what made him so special. Whereas Westbrook just has been sort of the guy. Look, even when Westbrook was at his best in the early days with Oklahoma City, people still had these same reservations about his game. There was still the thought process of, look, why is this guy taking shots in the last 3 minutes of important games when you have Kevin Durant, arguably the best scorer in the history of the league? I mean, a guy who, I mean, I've said it over and over again when he was with Golden State and then when he's with Brooklyn last year going against the Bucks, like every time the guy goes up to shoot, I expect it to go in. I mean, every single time. I mean, there's not a shot he takes where you're like, oh, that's not going in. He's just an incredible player. And yet here you had many times possessions when he was in Oklahoma City where he doesn't even touch the ball and Russ is firing up all kind of crazy shots. So even at his best, the tendencies that now make Russ a liability were tendencies that were there even when he's playing at the peak of his powers. And so, yeah, look, the Lakers stink. I think the question is, can they hold off the Pelicans for number 10? I will not be surprised at all if the Lakers end up in the 10 seed. And if Portland wasn't tanking, I could see. There's still a scenario where the Lakers fall completely out of the playoffs. They're only three games ahead of Portland. They're only 3.5 against San Antonio. But I guess we're in the same point with the Cavs and the play-in, right? That the Lakers would have to look, they're 2-8. They could certainly go through a bad stretch. The other side of that equation, though, is Portland or San Antonio would have to go on a big run, and that's not happening.
You know, I think. So the Pelicans are interesting. You know, I read a report, and maybe I just that Zion was supposedly going to be in New Orleans.
Yeah, he was coming back. He still, though, hadn't been cleared to even play one-on-one yet. So the idea that he's going to just be back in the city and yet he's still
if he hasn't played one-on-one yet, he's not. Yeah, playing.
I don't think he's playing this season. I would be stunned if he's playing at this point. Why?
Has he done any exercise, Mike?
No, I heard something today. Where did I hear this? This was on. I heard it on. Maybe it was on
Mismatch.
No, maybe I'm no. Behind, I think I'm it was. I think. I think it might have been on the Real Ones with the Mark Cuban episode, but maybe it was something else. But somewhere I heard or read that he had lost 26 pounds, which could be just a fraction of his real weight. Anyway, the bottom line is I don't think he's gonna come back. I really don't. New Orleans is set up nicely. I mean, they do have some pieces now that, again, if you can put a healthy Zion back, and we talked about this last week. Look, if he comes back, their team becomes really dangerous if you get the best version of Zion. And I don't mean dangerous just like in the playoffs this year. I'm talking about moving forward next season. If they bring back the roster that they have now and you have Valanciunas and you have CJ McCollum, you have Brandon Ingram, you have Zion. Look, that's a good team. I mean, it's a good, solid winning team. I mean, that's a team that I think would compete. Certainly they're for sure in the play-in at worst. And I think their ceiling's pretty high. Look, the Western Conference next year could look a lot different, right? Because Denver's going to get their two guys back, whether they get them back this year or they get them back at the beginning of next season. You got to figure that they're going to be better. Golden State, who knows what Draymond's health is. Klay should certainly be better, having been recovered and played out this season. Memphis is probably going to be better. Utah, who knows, could be a completely blow that up situation, or maybe Utah outperforms playoff expectations this year instead of underperforms them. Dallas has some more flexibility now that they dealt Porzingis. The Lakers certainly aren't bringing back the same roster around LeBron and AD. They're going to do whatever possible. The Clippers, you bring back Paul George and Kawhi. Did you see? I had the TV muted, but they showed Kawhi working out. I'm assuming that was before the game at Golden State. He was on the trip. So maybe those two guys are closer than we think. I would not want to play the Clippers. I would not want to play the Clippers in the playoffs if suddenly I'm staring across the benches at Kawhi and Paul George. I would not want that to happen. Now George had the torn UCL or UNL in his elbow, but Kawhi's been out almost a year, and it's not even a torn. It wasn't a torn ACL, so it seems like he.
Well, he also dragged his feet on getting the surgery. Remember,
saying it still seems like he should potentially.
Yeah,
the potential for Kawhi to come back seems fairly strong. All right, so on the Western Conference, is there any chance that any of those play-in teams? New Orleans can't beat anybody, right?
No.
If New Orleans gets in, they can't beat anybody. The Timberwolves can't beat anybody. You think the Timberwolves can beat somebody in the top six?
They've been playing so good.
They've won 5-2. They've won 5 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. I guess they get Memphis. If you're not a believer in Memphis, if you're going to hold
if they got Golden State, could they beat Golden State?
No, absolutely not.
Even with the way Golden State's playing right now?
No. Even without Draymond, Golden State is beating.
Okay.
Steph is not letting Golden State lose to Minnesota.
Okay.
Now, I don't think Steph can carry him against better opponents, but he's certainly not losing to Minnesota.
Okay.
Can the Lakers beat anybody? AD healthy?
AD healthy. LeBron averages 30 points a game and Westbrook takes 5 shots a game. I don't know.
Let's put it this way. If you're Memphis, do you want to see the Lakers in round one?
No.
No, you absolutely don't. You absolutely don't. You're hoping that, yeah, you're not.
No team wants to, let's be honest, no team wants to see the Lakers, and it's because the LeBron James is on that team.
Right, right. And I would be equally not surprised to see any one of those teams at the top of the Western Conference just completely destroy the Lakers and blow them out
4-0. Is this going to be LeBron's worst winning percentage season as a player? I can't remember what our record was when he was a rookie.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. It might be similar to that. It could very well be similar.
I'm going
to
pull it up right now. Hold on. Cavs record 2002-2003. Is that the right year?
I think so. Or just type in Cavs record in LeBron's rookie year. That'll save you.
Oh, nope. That was the year before. 2002-2003 was the year before LeBron James.
Okay.
So, I want to figure this out. 2003. Oh, 35-47.
Okay, so to match that, they've got to go 7-11 to match that. They could. They also might not.
Yeah.
The Lakers aren't beating anybody. No. I would not want to play them, but the Lakers are not beating anybody. So it comes down to, for me, you look back at we had this conversation last week, and we tried to rank the teams, and I think I had Phoenix at the top, and then I believe I put Dallas and Denver. I can't remember which order I put them in, but I think I still had Dallas 2 and then maybe Denver 3 in terms of confidence and their ability to get to the finals. I still think Dallas and Denver are extremely dangerous. How good Luka's been over the last 2 months, how good Jokic has been the entire season, and what he's done the last 2 games, and the roster that he's carrying, I think you make a pretty good case that Jokic is going to win the back-to-back MVP. Certainly that game, overtime game against the Pelicans, where he goes for a 46-point, or what do you have? How many did he have? 46 that game?
Yeah, 46. Yep.
So, and had 30 in the overtime, in the fourth quarter in overtime. Look, Jokic, because of what he can do in the post and from the three-point line and from the mid-range, what he does as a passer, I think he's still second in the league in rebounding. And the roster that he's carrying, and he's got them at 39-26. And I know they're a 6 seed, but they're not that far away. They're a game and a half out of the 4 seed. To me, I think Jokic is the favorite right now. I think if I had to vote, I'd probably vote for Jokic 1, Giannis 2, Embiid 3, which I know most people probably have Embiid in the 1 or the 2 spot. I still tend to lean a little bit more towards Giannis. Embiid's great, and I don't think you could argue with any one of the 3 of those guys, but I still think I'd probably take Jokic at this point, just because, again, what he does from all aspects of the game and just all over the floor. He can kill you from the 3-point line. He can kill you in the post. He can kill you in the mid-range. He kills you with passing. He can rebound the ball. He's a much better defender now than he's ever been. Giannis is probably the best 2-way guy. Embiid can be when he's engaged and when he's not fatigued. But I still think Jokic is the guy. And I would not want to play Denver in a playoff series. I would not want to play Dallas in a playoff series. I would be much more afraid of playing Dallas or Denver than I would of playing Memphis or Utah. And Golden State, if they don't have Draymond, I wouldn't be excited to play them, but I wouldn't be scared either.
Yep. All right, so the last things I want to talk about, Mike, there's 2 coaching things we'd be remiss to not mention.
Okay.
The first, Greg Popovich, yesterday, tied Don Nelson for the most wins as a head coach. He needs 1 more to become the NBA all-time leader. Hope it comes tomorrow when they play Toronto. selfishly. But this is the end for him, right? He's retiring after this season. Do you think that's happening?
I don't know. It seemed like he has had good reason to retire for the last 4 or 5 seasons.
He hung on for this record, Mike.
You think so?
Yeah. I think he's retiring after this year. Okay. He's going to go out like Tim Duncan, where he's not going to have his huge, you know, retirement tour. He's just going to retire.
Do they hire Duncan? Does Duncan get that job?
He'd probably be a candidate, right?
I would think so. Becky Hammon gone.
Yep.
I would think there'd be a decent chance that Tim Duncan gets that job. Maybe, yep. Maybe not. But I would think there's a decent chance.
Is Pop the greatest coach of all time? Do you put him up there? Is he a top 5 greatest coach of all time? I know it's kind of hard. He's got to be a top 5 at least. I mean,
yeah, he's a top 5.
Him,
he's
on Jackson, he's on him.
Red Auerbach. And I think we did this at one point.
Pat Riley has got to be up there.
Riley's
right?
Probably up there. Yeah, I think those are probably your 4. Popovich, Riley, Jackson, Auerbach. I think those are your 4 Mount Rushmore of coaches. Pop, I mean, how do you compare him to those other guys? I mean, I think obviously Auerbach coaches in a completely different era, and his championship record is unassailable. Phil Jackson coached the greatest player of all time. But
one of the top, 2 of the top 15 players of all time included in that.
Yeah, for the Lakers. When you put Kobe and Shaq, depending on where you want to put those two guys, I think, look, I guess push comes to shove. I think Pop is right there. Just because of the fact that he was with one team and
made the playoffs like 17 years in a row.
Right. Sort of built a dynasty over probably the longest period of time of any of those guys. Conversely, you can look at Phil Jackson won it in 2 different places. You could talk about Auerbach and just his dominance over his particular era. And then Riley doing what he did with the Lakers, then going to the Knicks, and then what he's done with the Heat as an executive, which I know doesn't count on his coaching resume, but is impressive nonetheless. Yep. I don't think you can go wrong with any of those guys. Maybe the answer is if I want to build a long-term dynasty, maybe I pick Pop. If I want to win, if I'm in a one-game situation, I think I might take Riley just because of his competitiveness. I think if I had to win one game and wanted a coach on the bench, I think Riley might be my choice in that case.
Okay, that's fair. All right, and the other coaching news, Mike, I couldn't go the episode without mentioning it. How about those Tar Heels, baby? Oh, yeah. Beating Coach K in his last game at home I had a very nice smile. And I know we have several Duke fans that listen to our podcast or contribute to our podcast, but it made me, us being UNC fans, it made me smile from ear to ear. I was very excited about that.
That had to be a great feeling in Chapel Hill. I mean, there's no question that, look, at this point, you have the utmost respect for what Coach K was able to accomplish. And I don't care if you're 2 guys hosting a podcast in Cleveland, Ohio, or you're a lifelong North Carolina fan, you still have to have respect for
100%.
What Krzyzewski was able to do. But man, if you're a North Carolina fan, player, coach, that had to feel really, really good to know that you spoiled his going away party. There's no question that there were whatever smile you had, Hubert Davis and his players had much bigger smiles, and Tar Heel fans and alumni across the country, I'm sure, felt that exact same way, that being able to intrude on that moment, I'm sure felt very, very good. And at the same time, you have a tremendous amount of respect for him, but man, you're trying to beat that guy. And that rivalry, I think, is unparalleled in college basketball. And you just go back over the history of the players who have played in it and the quality of the games and just how meaningful it is year in and year out on the college basketball landscape. And I think that, to me, that's hands down the best rivalry in college basketball. It's not even close.
Yeah. All right. So That's all I have. Like, is there anything else we need to talk about, or should we just do a dad joke and move on and be done for the night?
Well, I think we probably should do a dad joke and move on for the night. Let's do that.
All right. Okay. Here we go.
You gonna go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
I asked my dog what 2 minus 2 was, Mike. She said nothing.
Nice. There you go. Do you know why they don't have very many casinos in Africa?
Oh, no. I don't know.
Too many cheetahs.
Oh, God.
All right. Let's leave it there.
Okay. Sounds
good. All right. So thank you for checking out this NBA edition of the Hoopheads podcast. We appreciate you hanging with us. We're looking forward to the remainder of this NBA season. It should be a great stretch run with teams competing and jockeying for position. It's going to be very interesting to see how teams try to position themselves in the East to presumably avoid Brooklyn and probably try to get to the Cavs. And I think teams are going to probably be trying to, well, they'll be keeping an eye on what the Lakers are doing, because like you said, I don't think anybody will be excited about the prospect of playing LeBron and AD, although I won't be surprised if whoever they play ends up sweeping them right on out of the playoffs. So it remains to be seen. It's going to be a fun end of the season. We'll see where the MVP discussion goes. Right now, I'd have Jokic slightly in the lead, but who knows? We will see where things wrap up. And on that note, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.